Okay, we'll bring the meeting in order of the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance Committee and start out with the roll call.
Representative Cornish.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Considine.
Here.
Representative Dean.
Here.
Representative Hertas. Representative Hillstrom.
Here.
Representative Howe.
Here.
Representative Lohmer.
Here.
Representative Lucero. Representative Neuberger. Representative O'Neill. Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Rosenthal. Representative Schoen. Representative Ward.
Here.
Representative Winkler.
Here.
And Representative Zerwas.
Okay, having a quorum present here, would anybody wish to move the minutes?
So moved.
Representative Considine moves the minutes of February 18th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, minutes approved. Let's see. Representative Anderson isn't here yet. Representative Anderson isn't here, is he?
He's here, but his testimony is not.
Oh, the testimony. Okay. We'll have a fluid schedule here, so we'll start out. Is the post board ready? Are you out there? Put you on the spot right away. Going to have a budget presentation by the Peace Officer Standards of Training Board Executive Director Nathan Gove. And if you want to start out with your name and title, and go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Cornish and members of the committee. Again, my name is Nathan Gove. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training, commonly referred to as the Minnesota Post Board. And to my right is Mr. Dan Boytum. He is our budget officer for the Post Board. I'll be referring to the 2016-2017 biennial budget document that you have in your packet, dated January 27th. When I originally appeared before the committee to provide an agency overview of the Post Board, I explained that our base budget of $4,120,000 is funded by a special revenue account, actually two of them, one being from a surcharge on certain criminal and traffic convictions, non-parking in the traffic area, and a reinstatement fee on two non-DWI license reinstatements for suspensions for failure to appear or paid fines. The governor has recommended a 1.8% increase in funding to cover compensation-related costs each year for fiscal year 2016 and 2017. This results in a $17,000 increase for fiscal year 2016 and a $34,000 increase for fiscal year 17. This is intended to allow the Post Board to continue to provide current levels of service to the public that we provide. I'm happy to answer any questions that members might have concerning that.
Okay, members, we've had the overview already of your of the Post Board earlier, and then today's just the budget presentation. So if we have any questions about the budget request. Well, that was quick and easy. Thank you very much. I don't have any questions, and we will be talking at you in the future, see what we can do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you very much. Okay, next we're going to move into the fire safety arena, the fire safety account, and what we're going to do is start out with an overview, a presentation before we move in to my bill, and the way to cheat a little bit. I won't have to give such a long introduction. And are we ready to begin? Do you want to start out with your name and title and why you're here and overview of the fire safety count? That'd be great.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me, and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota, but I'm here today in my capacity as the chair of the Fire Service Advisory Committee. And what I'm going to do for a couple minutes, Mr. Chairman, is I'm going to talk about the who this group is, what we do, and frankly, why the importance and significance of the account and how it's functioning in Minnesota and how it's been functioning since 2006. So I'll just spend a couple minutes on each one of those, and then Mr. Zygmunt will finish out the overview presentation. And you have some of these materials in front of you. It may be helpful if you pull that out, and I'll reference some of those as we walk through this. I know the staff handed out one that says Fire Service Advisory Committee at the top, and then there's a binder. So if you can get that stack in front of you, then that will help. So first, the who. Who's the Fire Service Advisory Committee? So the legislature in 2006, and work started on it in 2005, made a decision to create a specific account and program, frankly, to meet the needs within this state on a statewide basis in terms of the fire service community and protecting citizens and property in this state from the risks that are associated with fire and related disasters. So it was a bipartisan effort, and I was directly involved with the process at that time. The chief house author was former and deceased Representative Steve Smith. The Senate chief author was Senator Ann Ress. So the effort then was broad-based. It was bipartisan. It's continued that way. There was another a series of some changes and updates to the law in 2013, and similarly, it was a bipartisan effort. So I just state that because it's factual and it's important from my perspective, and I think all the groups involved. So the Fire Service Advisory Committee, as you if you could pull that up, and you'll see the statutory citation. The groups that appoint representatives to serve on it, those groups were involved with the process in creating this in 2006. But you have the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association, the Minnesota State Fire Department Association, the MPFF, the Minnesota Professional Firefighters, the League of Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Association of Townships, our organization, Insurance Federation of Minnesota, then the International Association of Arson Investigators and the Fire Marshals Association, and the Commissioner of Public Safety, designated rep, who's been the Assistant Commissioner, Mark Dinansky. We didn't have a roster presented. I won't give you the names of those. If anybody's interested, we can, Mr. Chairman, make sure that you all have a roster to see who's on it. It's statewide. We have the statute requires representatives that are not within the seven-county metropolitan area, so the statutory requirements are set forth. And really what the purpose of the Fire Service Advisory Committee is to make recommendations to the Commissioner of Public Safety. And the statute that sets it forth gives the charge, so that's the who we are. I've served as the chair. I'm not in the fire service groups, and in my capacity as the chair from the insurance industry. But our role and interest in the issue is that when the program was created, it's funded by a surcharge on individual homeowners policies, commercial fire policies, and so all of Minnesotans pay for, if you will, this program. And again, businesses and individuals, and that surcharge is put in a special revenue account, and that's the fire safety account. And so that's the who in terms of the what. That piece of paper in front of you gives the charge. So, and I take it as the chair of this group that statutory charge that you at the legislature has set forth is what guides us in terms of our discussions and decision making. There's three specific statutory purposes for that money in the fire safety account, and I'll just reference these. It's the money is to be expended in these three areas: for the Minnesota Board of Firefighter Training and Education, the program and staffing of the Minnesota State Fire Marshal Division, and then third, for fire-related regional response team programs and any other fire service programs that have the potential for statewide impact. So this is the account that fully funds the state fire marshal's offices. Prior to the account, it wasn't done that way, but we and as a state and you as the public policy makers have made that decision to consolidate that. So that's the what we do. We have a very robust process in terms of regular meetings. I set the agendas and run the meetings. I view my role as we have a lot of experts and professionals that are around the table from the groups that I mentioned to you. I'm not in that box, but I view my role at most meetings. I think if you ask any members, I ask a lot of questions. And for me, I'm going to challenge anybody and everybody that's coming to our meetings and bring it back to the statute, charge, what our purpose is, where the money is to be expended, and then we'll conclude that process. Then as part of that, what we'll do is we make recommendations to the commissioner. I submit those formally on behalf of the group as a result of our decision making, and then the commissioner ultimately has the final decision. But the statute sets forth that it's those recommendations that guide the commissioner. Again, it's a very robust process. We discuss. We present it. The commissioner isn't bound by those. That commissioner's office can make decisions, make the final decision, make changes. I had an opportunity yesterday to meet with Commissioner Doman, and I view that again as my role, is to communicate directly with the leadership of the Department of Public Safety. And while I'm not speaking for her today, and she can for herself, but I think if you asked her or her staff, they're here, that she's very pleased with the program in terms of its history, its operations, how we function, and whether we're doing the job that you has set forth in the statute. So we deal with immediate needs, again, the base budgets, but we also, so ongoing needs, but we also look at the long-term needs and the strategic planning of the fire service groups and the needs on a statewide basis, and where and how should we be spending the money. From my perspective, and maybe the third point, Mr. Chairman, so that was the who, the what, and then the why. The why, from my perspective, what I would comment is that, and I would just urge the committee, it is vitally important that we keep the money and use the money in the fire safety account for the purposes that the legislature has set forth. There are unmet needs. Again, as I've been around this now since its inception, and have spent a fair amount of time, again, asking questions, but looking at the literature, and there's some of it you'll hear today. There's a lot more that we won't be able to present today. But there's unmet needs, and we have an opportunity with this account and with the dollars that are in it to make the recommendations and to, frankly, do those things in terms of the professional firefighters, the fire departments, to meet the needs in terms of training, education. This is a very important program for local units of government, as we have their involvement in the process. And we have some 21,000 firefighters in the state. There's 1,800 of them are career. There's 3,000 paid on call. The rest are volunteers. So volunteers play a pivotal role in the Minnesota state in terms of meeting that need in this state. We have some 792 fire departments, 14 career, 28 combination, and then again the bulk of that is volunteer. And I mention that just because it is so important in my mind that we use the dollars to serve the men and women who are volunteering to perform this function in your communities. Again, for the purposes that the legislature has set forth. So there's again these unmet needs. I'll reference, and then I'll conclude this, Mr. Chairman, and turn it over to Mr. Zygmunt. But there is a lot of information that's out there. I had the opportunity last summer to listen to a presentation at a study that was done by the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. And I'll just reference it, and again, this is a document that subsequent to this, some of you may, any of you would find it useful to look at this. It's called Empty Boots, Quiet Sirens: The State of Non-Career Firefighting in Minnesota. It's a very extensive document that really looks at the demographics, the changing demographics of the firefighting community and the volunteers in the state, and how there's a lot of things that are really kicking off alarm bells. So I'm just presenting for you today that there's significant concerns and some would even call a crisis kind of on the horizon with the changing demographics, and how Minnesota has positioned itself with volunteers to meet this critically important public need that underscores for me as the chair of this group the reasons behind the account, but being able to use all of the dollars in the account to address the many areas of the and House File 800, I know will be coming up, that specifically deals in details with base funding, one-time funding appropriations, and some policy changes. And I said it was the last thing, but the last thing I will mention is just referencing some of the specific, because Mr. Espenson, George, cannot be here today, so one of our witnesses, Mr. Chairman, we're down to two, but we had three. But he was going to talk a little bit about some of the specific areas, and you should have in front of you also the last letter, and the most recent letter that I sent to Commissioner Doman on behalf of the FSAC that details our discussion and decision-making process and how we concluded spending recommendations to her on a current basis. But that specifically deals with the Minnesota Aviation Rescue Team, MART, DNR, made some specific funding requests for leadership training for firefighters that we responded and made recommendations on. Again, the MBFTE, the Board of Firefighter Training, and I view that it is truly one of our core three priorities for spending recommendations. But getting the dollars out to do the Firefighter 1, the Firefighter 2 training that is just essential to equip the volunteers that are stepping up to do what we all need to have them do in this state. And then the areas of, again, the State Fire Marshal Division, as I indicated, this is their budget. And so as we responded to the presentations of the Deputy Chief Bob Dom presented that, the Chemical Assessment Response Teams and the Emergency Response Teams, the CAT and the ERT teams were the areas that in that letter that you have in front of that we made specific spending recommendations. So that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude on that. That's the who, what, and the why, as I see it from my background presentation. I'd be happy if anybody has any questions to handle it now or at the end of our presentation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. More testimony?
Mr. Chairman, members, Niall Zickman, I'm the fire chief up in Spring Lake Park, Blaine Mollins, but today I'm here representing the coalition. If you look at the cover, you'll see it's the fire chiefs, the fire department association, the local fire marshals, the union, and then the arson investigators. And we've had this coalition since 2007 working on this, and so speaking to all that. And what we've distributed today was our strategic plan that was presented 3 years ago in this committee. And I'll direct you to a couple pages. If you go to double I, you'll see halfway through the page, we detailed a total need of $39 million. And I just want to comment, that's exclusive of any payroll. One of the biggest problems the career departments have is whenever they do training, they have to do callbacks. They can't take firefighters off shift because they need them to respond. And so their payroll dollars are pretty significant. That's not included here. Clearly, on the volunteer paid on call side, there is no compensation or any significant compensation. And so every dollar that goes into this system gets leveraged. The Firefighter 1 class is 110 hours. And we have literally every year several thousand people in this state that will go through that class and donate their time as long as the tuition is paid. And so again, as you put money into this system, it gets leveraged exponentially. On page 14 and 15, I think actually I just misspoke, 12, 13, and 14, there are some how Minnesota compares. And you'll see on page 12 the fire comparison. And we continue, I've been tracking this for almost 20 years, Minnesota continues to enjoy one of the most efficient fire services in the nation, ranking 42nd to 45th, sometimes 46th on a per capita or per 1,000. We rank 21st on population. Why is that? It's the combination of the predominance of volunteers, but even on the career side, when you go next door to Wisconsin, state statute, if you have a population over 10,000, you have a career department. 82,000 population, my department is predominantly volunteer. Chief Seal from Bloomington is here. Over 80,000. Predominantly volunteer. And it's because we made these wise choices. We're using some strategic dollars and then creating this fire safety account. And so it just continues to show how efficient. The rest of the report detailed back again in 2012 the variety of needs that we've been addressing and chipping away at. If you go to page 16 and 17 now, you will see a series of charts and graphs. And so this is just addressing one of the big three, the training side. Again, we talked about the fire marshal's office and then our state teams. So this shows how many individuals in the state of Minnesota have completed a training class and then taken a nationally accredited test to a national standard. And we use these charts to show there's 21,000 firefighters in the state of Minnesota. We have 75 that are certified technical rescuer. And as you go down that list, and you see 9,465 to the basic firefighter 1 and 2, the very basic level. Not even half of our firefighters were trained. And it wasn't because they weren't willing to put the time in, because the money wasn't there. It's $1,250 for the tuition and $100 for the test. Well, they weren't going to give their time and then pay to get trained. And so I think this was very helpful 3 years ago in helping the committee. The handouts that we distributed update these charts. And there's two of them. One has all the data, but because the firefighter 1 and 2 activity is so predominant, it skews those other airport firefighter apparatus. So I just took out the firefighter 1 and 2 because it was skewing those graphs. So it helped you see, you know, on the airport firefighter, we've had a tripling of the number of firefighters that are now certified in airport fire. You look at the fire apparatus operator. These are $500,000 and $1 million pieces of apparatus that you're operating. Shouldn't you have the individual go through a class? They'll go through the class. They just wanted the tuition paid for so they didn't have to pay to get trained to do the job that they're volunteering or on the career side throughout the profession. And then on down the list, you see the firefighter numbers. You know, well, now we're up to almost 16,000. You say, well, we're almost there. That's good news. It is great news. But when you go back to the report, empty boots, quiet sirens, the number of active certified firefighter 1 and 2 is still around 9,000. Because of the demographics and the massive turnover that's going on. So it's one thing to get everybody trained to that, it's another to keep them trained. And again, we're, all of us in the volunteer side are in just a major effort to recruit and train new firefighters as we're seeing our departments turn over. And so it's a constant issue as we not only have to train new people, keep the existing people trained, but as people retire out, to replace those people. So it's a journey, it's not, well, we got there, we're done. And so these charts just helped. The bar chart is a graphic illustration of when more money came into the account, the fire service was willing to engage and donate their time, whether it's a volunteer career, and go through the training. As the money is tapered off, that activity is dropped. You graphically see that, so I included that chart.
Mr. Zicker, we had a question here from Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming down today and taking time out of your day to do this. And as you go through your issues here with funding, one of the things Representative Lohmer and I have been trying to address is the issue of what we have, our volunteer departments. I have quite a few, and I work with quite a few professionally. And one of the issues that we have going on here is, and I know I'm preaching to the choir, but that's okay. I'll get an amen from the crowd sooner or later. But what we have here are these small fire departments, volunteers. I have one department in particular. It's a small town of about 500 people if you count the graveyard. And what you've got is this volunteer department, they're responding to crashes on state highways and on federal interstates. That's probably 30% of their call volume. And you have local, you know, local taxes are paying for these departments, and you have locals that are serving on these departments, but yet it's very it's more often than not that they are helping and rendering aid to people that don't even live in this state. And I know that that's a big financial burden for a lot of these smaller fire departments, especially the volunteer ones. So how do we fix that problem?
Mr. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Neuberger. That's an issue that has come up over the years. It's not come up to the level that the association has addressed it because there just hasn't been the energy. So we've worked a number of times with those local departments and given them some strategies. One of the things we did do was we passed legislation a number of years ago that allows fire departments to invoice for those services if their local municipality or governing body passes a fee schedule. And then on top of that, a few years after that, we passed additional language that says if you own real property in the state of Minnesota and you can't collect on that bill, you can now put an assessment. Now, obviously, you have to wait for that property to sell, to capture that. If it's out of state, that's still a problem. So we've done those two things, and we've worked with those folks. But the amount of money that is flowing through the fire safety account, I've traveled the state extensively. It was typical to see a training budget in a department you described. Many, many. I've seen departments with an $18,000 total budget in a department, where their training budget was $100 or $500. The fire safety account is dumping literally thousands of dollars into their training and helping to ease that burden. I was up in Cuyuna Range, which is Pillager over to Brainerd, and the 29 departments there in the last 3 years between the fire safety account and the additional pension aid, $610,000 additional dollars have flowed into those systems. And then last year we passed, Representative Shannon Savick carried the bill for a $500 stipend. So we've not directly addressed their problem because on a statewide basis it hasn't risen, but we've gone and given them tools to work with and offered other assistance and then provided these dollars. So it's a partial answer to a problem. It's illustrative of the problem that is going on out there. There's more need than money to address.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So trying to unpack your answer, which was good. Thank you very much. So what you're saying is that we have two problems here. One is the way that I see it is that we have small local municipalities that are serving people that live in Georgia or Illinois or North Dakota or wherever, and they're not getting reimbursed for that. Number one, correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. They may not be invoicing them though either. So they have to go and try that too. So.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you. And then finally, so then what you're saying then is part of the issue is just the lack of education on what the options are for recovering recovering money to pay for these expenses. So is that what you're saying then? There are some departments that are just they don't realize what they have in front of them, so they're not taking advantage of that.
Mr. Zickman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that's a piece of it. And I guess, specific to why we're here today, the fire safety account was never created to do that type of reimbursement. And when we worked, I think it was Lower St. Croix Valley was the specific department we worked with a number of times, several years, we had a number of meetings and offered, and at that time, the goal, these are state highways, and the strategy, there's state highways, they're the ones with the obligation, it should be state funded. The fire safety account was set up specifically for the fire marshal and for the training and the statewide teams. If we add that on, we see it as a never-ending journey of funding fire departments, and there simply isn't enough money in the fund to address those needs. So we need a different strategy to do that, and we'd be happy to work with you and other legislators on finding a revenue source. They're not alone. Any of our perimeter border fire departments have that issue, and any of us with interstates, because it's obviously not residents always, Minnesota residents.
We kind of cut you off in the middle of your testimony. Did you have some to finish?
So I just wanted to finish. The remainder of the document talks about the funding for the state fire marshal and the state teams. So briefly on the state fire marshal, and you'll hear more. Back when we initiated the fire safety count in 2007, the fire marshal's office had lost over a dozen people, almost 20% of their staff. And they are our only resource statewide. you don't want small towns, even bigger towns, having their own fire marshal, fire investigator. There's not enough mass. There's not enough there's not enough work for them. It makes more sense for the state, the fire marshal, to have a dozen fire investigators geographically situated. They had seen those numbers dwindle. We were literally completely out of code support people, and it's a state code. We enforce it locally, but again, in the rural area, there is no local fire marshal. So restoring that office, all those services go back to the local. They're inspecting the schools, they're inspecting the prisons, they're inspecting the lodging, because that expertise is better housed. The state teams, we only had one, the chemical assessment team, that has been funded, and that's, we have one of those teams, we subsidize that half. The costs are twice what the state provides. The Minnesota Task Force 1 has never gotten a base budget, and that was one of the targets, and in this proposal, for the first time, there'll be a base budget, and now our Minnesota Air Rescue team. It's our only aerial rescue. They've been out a number. It's a partnership between the State Patrol and St. Paul Fire provides the technicians. The State Patrol flies the bus. So critical pieces of keeping Minnesota safe and using a statewide approach, and then this fund to fund those teams. So I just wanted to give you an overview. That detail, other than MART, the Minnesota Air Rescue, that's a new team that's just been created since, you know, the 2012. And so that's when we get to the bill, we talk about the funding to provide them some base budget. I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your generous time in the committee, and members for your attentive listening.
Thank you, sir. And we've got four questions. Keep in mind we've got a bill coming up after this and then another bill in the next hour. Representative Quam is first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at these charts, it's the fire instructors make up just under 1 in 4 of the certified firefighters. Is that approximately correct?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Quam. So, in a fire department, you rely on all your officers to be instructors, and then they almost all have a training officer. And one of the national standards, if you're an officer, you have to have as a prerequisite instructor, because that's part of what you're doing is now you're always instructing. So you could argue there's 21,000 firefighters. About 5,000 of those should be officers if you look at your classic management. And so that just is showing, as we put the money in the system, we're finally starting to get those officers and those training officers, you know, certified to a national standard at the instructor level, if that answered your question.
Representative Quam.
Mr. Chair, I was trying to find out if that's about the proportionality, especially with the volunteer systems. It's nice to have a fairly decent density of instructor qualified. So that was like a yes, no, or actually it's close to four. What I was already getting to was how many departments and sites, because that then gives me an idea of the density. You know, I'm just trying to understand.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quan, I believe the exact number of fire departments in the state of Minnesota is 783. The fire marshal is behind me. He'll correct me, I'm sure, if I'm off one or two. And of those, there are 14 that are all career. The rest are all volunteer, paid on call, duty crew. But the predominant is volunteer, paid on call.
Hey, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then Task Force 1, how many locations are there for Task Force 1?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, so the exact detail is in the book. The leader of Task Force 1, Chief Seal, is here. It's 5 different organizations, 4 departments, and then Dakota County is providing, and it's just a little over 200 individuals are trained or going through training at different levels, and they're the folks out on the silo rescues, the bridge collapse, etc. Very specialized, and he is in the audience if there are more detailed specific questions, because he is the expert.
Representative Quam.
Thank you. I asked for the update because the date on the book, my book, says February 12, so I assumed in the 3 following years there'd be more information. I did notice that there was some pictures in that of Flint Hills. When I worked at the Control Data Semiconductor Fab, we had our own ERT team that went through training and some certification. I would think Flint Hills and some others. So how many professional, you know, or company-based groups are there besides the normal fire departments?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, with your permission, there's a specific appropriation in the bill, and so maybe when we get to the bill, we have Chief Seal come up, and he can provide some of that detail and the expertise they offer. And I know Flint Hills, Grand Rapids has those, they call them battalions or private fire brigades, and some expertise, and whether or not they would ever assist on that, and what their relationship is between the two, but might be better at that time.
Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was trying to get some of the questioning done before you stepped forward for the bill.
Okay. Before you, again, Mr. Chair, we could have Chief Seal come and answer the question better tonight. So
we'll get it when we get the bill then. Thank you. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Fire safety account, Task Force 1, what kind of special weapons do you need?
Mr. Zickman.
Again, Mr. Chair, I need to defer. I can tell you I've been there. I've helped certify those individuals when they've tested. I've seen the equipment. It's beyond my technical expertise. It's specialized. But if Task Force 1 Commander Chief Seal can address that.
Okay, Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, my question, one of them is to you. I understand that we had there was some back in 13 some about $4.5 million of one-time money, and you were supposed to get a report in January of this year. I was just wondering if the chair received that report. Then, if not, if we can get a copy and maybe a look to it, or if that is in process.
Mr. Zickman.
Mr. Chair, members, I just turned to the State Fire Marshal. It's the Department of Public Safety that completes that report and issues it, and it's been done, and the Fire Marshal's indicated it can be provided to the committee.
We will get it to you.
Well, it should come to the committee, so that's...
I can just tell you briefly, Mr. Chair, members, that had one-time appropriation money going out to the Minnesota Board of Fire Training and Education, and all that money was spent. It had one-time money to get Task Force 1, and Chief Seal can talk about what they spent that money. Some of the money went to offset. Again, those CAT teams have been subsidized, and so we sent some money out to those. Those monies have been spent, and so all that would be in that report, that that money was used and spent.
If I have that in my office, or we'll find it somewhere, and I'll make copies available. I know it says that usually the report boilerplate language is it's furnished to the chair of the on January 15th of next year to the chairs of the public safety policy and finance. So there should have been probably a couple copies around. We'll get to you. Yeah, go ahead, Representative Hall.
Thank you, Chair. And I guess the other question is probably to you, Chief Zickman, is that I take it that these charts that we were given here with the 2011-2014 examples are the number of folks that took the test. Can you provide us any information on how many firefighters there are in the state of Minnesota, and what percentage are actually trained at this time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, yes, I believe the actual number is right around 20,330. So we always use the 20,000-21,000 number. These charts represent the number of candidates that successfully passed certification test. The passage rate on firefighter 1 and 2 is about 82-83%. They get to retry, it's about 90%. So the other tests are a little better than that. They're advanced tests. In 2013, we had over 4,300 students test. Last year, that dropped down to 3,600. As the money dropped off, the activity dropped off. We have all but 85. I'm just thinking in my mind a report that the training board gave the other day. All but 85 of the 783 departments in the state are taking advantage of the training dollars to use it for training and testing. When we first started the first year, that number was less than 300 of the departments took advantage. And as the training board has worked to advocate and educate now has an individual assigned to go out to every department and help them through that funding process. The marshal's office has streamlined the reimbursement process. We had departments that couldn't do the upfront payment to get reimbursed. And so now we've streamlined, we're paying right to the provider and paying right to the certification board, so the department doesn't even have to upfront the money. And so we've seen an increase in all those activities.
I guess I want to thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, Chief, I'm looking for a simpler answer. You got 20,000 firefighters. You got 10,000 that are currently trained at Firefighter 1 and first responder that are able to do firefighting, and you got 15,000. Where are we at with the certification for actually? Because I believe, if I'm correct, and I know I've been out of the realm a few years, but I still believe you need Firefighter 1 and first responder to go in and put the wet stuff on the red stuff. So if we got 20,000 firefighters out there, how many of them are trained to actually put the wet stuff on the red stuff in a simple number, not...
I tried to answer, but 9,000. There are 9,000 active certified to Firefighter 1 and 2, not even half.
Okay, Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question here, and perhaps the chair can also weigh in on this. I see on the bill that's coming up, we have $1.3 million that's going to be transferred to the Homeland Security and Emergency Management Division for these emergency response teams. That's an issue that's near and dear to my heart. In my district alone, I've got the Burlington Northern Line that runs through just about every community in my district, most of them. And as you know, that these train cars, they tend to explode. And it's unthinkable to me should that occur in one of our communities. I know in the past we had multiple ERT teams spread out throughout the state. It was cut down to one, which is in St. Paul, which I do believe is appropriate. However, the other teams no longer exist. I know that last year that there was funding that was given that we were able to establish another ERT team, which is in Moorhead. And again, I agree with the placement of that team. Very quickly, what's the status on getting more ERT teams as long as we've got all these trains going through with all of this oil that's highly volatile? What's the cost and where can they go?
Mr. Zick.
Mr. Chair, Representative Neuberger, again, it's your pleasure. We have the state Homeland Security that manages those teams, and maybe you want to address that with that appropriation piece, or we can address it now.
Could you wait till we get to the bill and do it specifically?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just remind us. Okay, that takes care of the questions. Representative Schoen, I didn't have you on the list.
No, I just thought of something real quick, Mr. Chair. He kind of intrigued me with somebody brought up the statement that in Wisconsin, of all places, they require career firefighter departments in towns over 10,000. Well, what's your opinion on that? Is that something we should pursue in Minnesota?
Well, Representative Schoen, I believe in local control. So if the Wisconsinites want to do that, now I'm married to one, so I have to be careful in my response. So
they did that's something. Their business. It seems like they did okay over there on that one.
Well, thank you very much for your presentation. Representative Anderson, do you have to get anywhere to go, or can you wait till I do my bill first, or do you want to jump? Do you have to get somewhere? Okay, I think I'll come to the table then and present the bill and keep our momentum flowing here. So,
Representative Cornish, you ready to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 800 to be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Very good. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 800 addresses the training for our firefighters. And one thing we wanted to mention before we get going here was the, and correct me if I'm wrong in the crowd, but a Gibbon firefighter recently was seriously injured while in mutual aid to Fairfax.
Yes, sir.
And Ryan Sabo, is he currently hospitalized right now?
Sir, he's airlifted to North Memorial Hospital. He's undergone one surgery for a pin in his femur. He has a fractured hip, three fractured vertebrae, and the other leg is broken in five places.
He was trapped under a large steel door.
The partial collapse of a steel door inside a commercial structure fire just a couple of nights ago.
So if any of you folks behind us or with the fire service here want to let them know that we're thinking about him while we're doing the bill today.
Thank you, sir.
House File 800, we'll get into the crux of it here. I'll give you a quick introduction. It's probably any of your summaries, but my familiarity with this subject starts back when I think Representative Smith first introduced it as a surcharge on the house insurance and the evaluation of your house, and went into account. And it was rather controversial, and it took some doing to finally get it through. And then we changed it again in years after that and recently to do with the transfers in and out. Both parties, I think, had used it for a fund to make up for shortages in the budget. And we kind of worked on it, Representative Hillstrom and I, and Representative Holberg and Smith, and then others in the Senate, to kind of remedy that of sorts, and reduced the amount that was into the fund, and then we did some changing in trying to protect the fund. And what this bill specifically will do is it'll amend Statute 299F.012, the fire safety account, and it'll allow for the appropriation of some money, and specifically first of all, Mr. Walsh, why don't you give them the scoop on why there's no fiscal note with this?
Mr. Chair, we generally don't request fiscal notes on bills that have appropriations because the cost is the appropriation set forth in the bill. I'm presuming that this bill, the interested parties have had conversations with the Department of Public Safety that sufficient money will be in the fund to fund these appropriations.
I knew the answer to that. I just wanted to make sure everybody was familiar, because we talked about fiscal notes and not letting bills out and holding them over until fiscal notes, but a bill like this with appropriation already involved with existing money doesn't require the fiscal note. What this bill will do is appropriate about $13.1 million in 16, $13.1 million in 17 from the account into a special revenue fund, $5.9 million to the Board of Firefighters Training Education, $5.9 million to fund the State Fire Marshal, $1.2 million to fund the Task Force, $1.3 million, these are round numbers, to the Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and $190,000 each year to the Air Rescue Team. One-time appropriation of $75,000 in 16 and 17 to the Fire Safety Account Special Revenue Fund, the Board of Firefighting and Education, $1.3 million to the Fire Safety Account Board of Firefighter Training Ed, and $100,000 in 16 from the Fire Safety Account to Homeland Security. $600,000 Special Revenue Fund to the State Fire Marshal in 16, $1 million to the Fire Safety Account Task Force 1, and $100,000 16 of the Fire Safety Account, the Homeland Security Management Division. Now, if you understood any of that, no, it's just for a quick rundown of where the money goes and the crux of the bill and how it operates and the need for it. I'll turn over to my testifiers. Thank you.
Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Acting Chair, Committee Members Ken Perlman, Fire Chief, Emergency Management Director for the City of Brooklyn Park. If you would indulge me just for a minute or two, I'd like to make two comments before addressing the bill. Although I have less information than we do on the Gibbon firefighter, I also wanted to share with the committee and just take a moment to recognize a Rice Lake firefighter. We have a team en route this morning to what appears to may have been a line-of-duty death that occurred last night. In addition, in follow-up to some of the questions earlier in response to Chief Zickman's testimony, the City of Brooklyn Park, January 1 of 2015, hired 18 full-time firefighters. This is directly in response to an ongoing challenge to recruit, retain, and train qualified firefighters who can safely respond to the needs in our community. The bill that's before you today would have a tremendous impact and continue to move the great work forward that this committee has done. 18,000 of the 20,000 Minnesota firefighters are volunteers. Without them, a vast majority of our communities would have no fire protection. You heard earlier the testimony that to certify a firefighter to the Firefighter 1 level is $1,250. There are communities where that one investment would represent 10%, 20% of their entire annual general fund budget. This is one of the reasons we're here today, to help assure proper training for the men and women who risk their lives to protect our property and our families, both career and volunteer. I have had the pleasure of being in this room with many of you over the last seven years, and in each of those testimonies, it seems like the risks that we are encountering continue to change and evolve. We are an all-hazard response organization. 7 years ago, shale oil was not rolling through our state the way it is today. That's just one of dozens of examples of the risks that our communities take on as the world becomes a scarier place to live. You've already heard an overview of the great work that the Fire Service Advisory Committee has done with regard to meeting the training needs of our firefighters. I want to add that the legislation that Representative Cornish worked on in 2012 made some changes to improve funding for the fire service and reduced the fee. If you will recall, the actual rate was reduced as part of that. This had a significant impact on our funding, and as a result, as Chief Zickman pointed out, it impacted the amount of training that we could do. A major piece of this bill is that it finishes the job that we started in 2012 to dedicate all of the revenue collected for its intended purpose. In 2012, we eliminated the general fund transfer so that all funds collected would go to the purpose intended. That's not to say that the general fund doesn't benefit. In fact, the general fund already benefits from the fact that there are no general fund dollars that go to the State Fire Marshal Division, that division is actually funded 70% from this account and the balance from fees. This year, we are putting an end to the need to come back to the legislation every other year seeking a supplemental appropriation for funds that were intended for this use. I believe this fix is long overdue and will assure that funds are used as intended as soon as they're available, making the process more efficient. I have passed out this morning a letter indicating the support from the League of Minnesota Cities. This bill is also supported by the Association of Townships. I'm here to represent the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association, the Minnesota Professional Firefighters, and the Minnesota State Fire Department Association, all of whom, of course, support this bill. I want to thank you all for your work and ask you for your support today.
Mr. Chair, I think that Mr. Diebel might have an idea on amendment here, and I wanted him to present it and then get the okay from the folks on the DFL side. It seems that the totals are wrong on the monetary description here. Mr. Diebel, if he could address that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and members, I was provided a different number than was introduced with the House File 800. The proposed change would be on page 1, line 17. You delete $13,100,000 and insert $13,956,000, and you do that in both places on line 17.
If it's okay with our DFL counterparts, and because we like to not do these last-minute amendments, then I would offer that as an author's amendment if people understood it.
No concern, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Where does it come from?
Representative Schoen.
Can you give a Cliff Notes explanation of why that became differently, Mr. Diebel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schoen, I believe that's just an accurate balance in the account.
Thank you.
Any other questions on this amendment? Representative Howell.
Well, thank you. Could, now, does that with all the different appropriations going to these places, is that what adds up to the 13,956 then? If that's kosher, or do we have another $800,000 to throw around?
Mr. Chair,
Please state your name.
Mr. Chair, members, Niles Zickman. The $13.1 million comes from the Department of Revenue estimate, and we've kind of just had an ongoing discussion with them that, you know, they've been underestimating. Okay, and so the money is in the account. We work with the DPS, fiscal Larry Freund, who's here in the audience, also can assure you that that money is there. And so when we made the recommendations, we worked off those numbers. But when we had the bill drafted, it was an oversight on our part, working with Representative Cornish. You know, the 13.1 was the number that revenue had, but in fact, the numbers that Representative Cornish just read off adding up adds up to this 13.9, and there is, in fact, that much money in the account.
Representative Powell? Mr. Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no concern with the amendment at all, but I just want for the folks here who haven't really heard this issue very often, at some point if you would address, you know, who makes sure that they actually spend the money where it is that we tell them they have to spend the money. Nothing else.
I'd offer that as an author's amendment, then the total change that Mr. Diebel described, unless you want it read again.
Any other questions by the members? Okay, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed.
So, Mr. Chair, if we could have Chief Seal come and address the question on Task Force 1, and then Mr. Reed come and address the question on the hazmat teams. And then to your question, Representative Hillstrom, the Department of Public Safety has the oversight to make sure the money is being spent, but we can assure you that the fire service is making sure it is being spent.
Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Yuli Seal. I'm the fire chief and emergency manager for the city of Bloomington, and I'm also the task force administrator for Minnesota Task Force 1. And forgive me, I can't quite track all of the questions that might have come up about the task force. The one that perked my ears up, somebody asked about special weapons. We don't do anything with special weapons. Maybe a law enforcement task force somewhere does, but we, all of our equipment is for technical rescues, confined space, high level and low angle rope rescues, trench rescues, and structural collapse rescues. So we do a lot of mechanically oriented technical rescue things like breaching and breaking, shoring of buildings that are falling down, shoring trenches so we can go in and rescue people that have gotten themselves into trouble.
Representative Sean.
Is he doing more? I can wait till he's done if he's doing a presentation specifically on Task Force 1. He's here to address questions.
I'm just here to address questions.
So, Mr. Chair and Chief Seal, Task Force 1 has several inputs from several departments. And thank you for the work that you do on that, because this is an extremely important task force, and it's one that I think has been unfortunately neglected to a point that is disappointing to me from a funding standpoint. So I think it needs more, because this is the one. So how do you recoup costs? Because Task Force 1, what is your? Can you give me an example of your most common call for service?
Chief Shields.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not have a common call for service. We've been on trench rescues. We've been in confined space rescues. We've been at building collapses. We've been at high angle rope rescues, sinkhole rescues. We've been to the landslide in St. Paul, the bridge collapse. I mean, we really pretty much cover all kinds of ground. We went up and worked for a short period of time at the Sudan mine fire. We've gone to Hawley, which is outside of Moorhead, to help shore a building that had burned. So we've done a number of things. I don't know that we have a common call. There are five primary entities that are involved in the task force: Minneapolis, St. Paul, Edina, Rochester, and Dakota County. We also have firefighters and others from supporting agencies that aren't part of those five primaries. Recouping costs currently is really about recouping equipment costs. All the time spent on responses is not recouped. That is pretty much at this time donated by those responders and their agencies. The equipment that we use during the responses and that we may use up during the responses, we try to recoup those costs through either grant dollars, which have pretty much gone away, or the fire safety account dollars that we've been given so far.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schoen.
What prevents Task Force 1, and what could we do? For instance, you're at a construction site collapse or confined space related to a worker that's been sent down into the sewer tunnel that Task Force 1 and the equipment and then those involved are not are they not allowed by law to bill the insurance company or the company that they're working for in the fashion such as we allowed fire departments that provided extraction at crashes to bill insurance companies now for those services? Why are we not billing the construction site or the insurance company that handles the insurance for these particular sites, if that's the case, if you end up in a grain bin or something like that? Why is the co-op not being billed for the services? That's my question.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, but I do not believe that we have the statutory authority to do that currently, other than recouping the costs that, you know, whether it's an extrication on the freeway or, in the case of hazardous materials, a hazardous materials spills. But I do not believe we have that ability currently to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the hazmat task force is a whole other ball game and a whole other section. That's the point that's very important, is that that's not this task force.
That's correct. The hazmat teams and the ERTs and the CAT teams out there are separate entities from Minnesota Task Force 1.
Mr. Chair and Chief Seal, can you give me an idea if just a ballpark dollar figure in people hours and equipment that rolls out the door when you would go to, say, the last structural collapse at either construction site or if it was not necessarily the landslide. I think we understand some of that, but and just into a building or something that had to be shored up. And just give me a ballpark figure.
Chief Shields.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that this isn't a good answer. It partially depends on the size of the response. We have the capability to respond with up to 72 people at once to provide 235 or 233 person platoons that can work a site 24 hours. So we work 35 for 12 and 35 for 12. In that case, we're talking significant expenditures depending on how long that response lasts. I would say for a 24-hour period, we're talking somewhere in the $15,000 to $20,000 range for personnel costs, and any equipment costs would be over and above that if we actually damaged or used up any of our expendables.
Representative Schoen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And on a final note, just the equipment that some agencies have acquired. I mean, St. Paul has, I think the fire marshal was here, but three rescues in the city. Two of them are hazmat related, and one's assigned to Task Force 1. And I mean, that's a $600,000 piece of equipment, probably minimum.
Just the truck.
Not the stuff on it. Plus, there's another truck that sits next to that truck ready to go. And so we have, this is the evolving need of our fire service. And I know Representative Howe talked about putting the wet stuff on the hot stuff, but let's look at the percentages that fire and law enforcement are doing more crisis intervention in these categories than the actual core foundation of what we came into history to do years and years ago. So these are the things we really need to pay attention to as well, and not forget that there's a lot of communities that there's no way they're going to be able to provide the resources to be a part of this. Thank you to those communities that have stepped up
and said it's important for, as Bloomington, Edina, Dakota County, and others, because we're going to call you, and we're going to need your help. So the rest of the state should also make sure that we're, I think this is something that deserves a little more money, Chair Cornish, but I know we'll have that conversation move on.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to beat this to death, but when I initially asked the question, Chief, you said there were weapons, and that this gentleman would explain to me what they were.
No weapons. It was he was just trying to say that I would explain to you, but there are no weapons.
I didn't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of a straightforward financial question, I guess, for Representative Cornish. The one-time appropriations are just to draw down this account, and then you expect on an ongoing basis that the other continuing appropriations will take care of the remainder of the funds?
Can I let him answer that, Representative Winkler?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, yes, the continued problem is revenue continues to underestimate. We can't spend the money until you appropriate it, so we always come back for this one-time appropriation. So this fixes that. So this bill is doing two things. It's taking the actual money that is being collected and now adding to those base budgets because we know it's there, but then we also need to appropriate out that money that is sitting there, and so that's the one time, and those have been designated to things that are one time because obviously that money is not going on, ongoing. So there's two things you're going on there. So it will draw the bill down, again, working with the DPS fiscal individual. They need some, there always need to be some money in the fund to cash flow, assuming the employees of the State Fire Marshal's Division want to get paid on a regular basis, because the money comes in, not sporadically, but there's peak months where the collections come in, three peak months, and the other 9 months, you know, it's much less. So they always need a piece for that. This one time, but then we should be on a track where we are appropriating the money that is coming in to the needs of the fire service.
Thank you, Reverend.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up then, just for example, the State Fire Marshal Division has $5.287 million each year, and then it has $600,000 on a one-time appropriation. How long are these appropriation numbers, you think, going to be good to take care of the money coming to those funds?
So, Mr. Chair, we have to
say you don't have to answer that one question, but it's just one example.
Right. Well, and I guess, again, this is what this bill attempts to fix. That one time is $400,000 for a database upgrade, so that's done, it's done. And the other $200,000 goes to shared services grants and a study. But then the ongoing has been raised up, the budget's been raised up to address the continued needs, which we still haven't met them all, but then take care of the money that's flowing in. Does that answer your question?
Representative Winkler.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess what I'm just trying to understand is how long will this increased amount cover the amount of funds that are coming in? You've got a fixed dollar amount in your appropriation, but the funds coming in, I suppose, are variable over time.
So if I understand the question, Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, at some point, well, even today, we don't have enough money to address all the needs. I think that'll always be the case. It's the case with everything you deal with here at the Capitol. And so we make do with what we have. This appropriation, this bill, addresses the money that is coming in, and we've got enough historical data now to say we've achieved the balance of appropriating the money and keeping enough in there for cash flow. So we shouldn't have to come back. That's the whole purpose of the bill, is to fix it. But we're as good at predicting the future as you, Mr. Representative Winkler. So we, based on the data we have, this should address the issue.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just wonder if maybe some sort of a percentage of the fund might be a better way to appropriate it, but maybe we can't appropriate a percentage. We have to just estimate a dollar amount and come back in the future and adjust these numbers. I did want to just raise one other question. This is related to the fire marshal. I did have feedback from one of the fire departments that I represent who raised concerns about using money from this fund to do inspections of private schools. And I don't know what the issue is, but I was addressed to me from one of the fire departments that I represent, and I guess I'd just like a response as to whether that's a good idea.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, that it is contained in another bill that we're going to hear later on that specific point, probably in the next week or two.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Bruce West, State Fire Marshal, and Mr. Chair and Representative, your question was about private schools and the inspection of private schools. You know, our division supports the inspections of private schools. I mean, we currently do public schools at this time. You know, so the way in which those would be funded would be up to the legislative body.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Winkler.
Then I guess the question is the appropriation contained in this fire safety account enough to address the additional resources needed to expand the expansion of those inspections, or is this amount not sufficient to make that possible?
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
And Chair and committee members, it is not at this time, including the inspection of private schools in the current fire safety account bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I can address my constituent.
Thank you.
Representative Newberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cornish and the others here. I just want to circle back to the ERT teams. I know we have $1.3 million in this bill allocated to the Homeland Security Emergency Management Division for the chemical assessment and ERT teams. As I said before, I know that there are two, one in Moorhead, one in St. Paul. My question would be, is this $1.3 million, is this going to continue to fund the two that we have, or does this include the expansion of new teams, especially to be located along these rail lines? If you could touch on that, that'd be great.
Go ahead, if you see your
Mr. name. Chair, Kevin Reed, I'm the Operations Branch Director for Minnesota Homeland Security Emergency Management. What this bill does is, as you know, in the other bill, that the rail safety account for oil transportation gave us some appropriation to establish a team in Moorhead. This bill then, that ends in 3 years, so we have established a team that would have no funding beyond 3 years, and this then takes that from 3 years and moves it forward. There's not additional funds in here to add additional teams. We will look at that as need comes up. There may be a need to add a team, but right now we're trying to take with this bill is we have teams that for 15 to 18 years have been operating at the same budget. And as technology changes, training changes, and admin costs, their fire department per firefighter costs go up. We haven't kept up with that, and this is what this is to do.
Representative Newberg.
Thank you for your answer. So, okay, I'm trying to get this straight. So we have $1.3 million, and in kind of sifting through the words here, a lot of this is going to go towards administrative costs, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's also technology costs. So it's to upgrade current capabilities in equipment to keep up with technology changes to better assess, and the training that is required for issues such as oil, ethanol. As those change, we have to develop those trainings to provide that, and this will assist in that process.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schoen.
Mr. Chair, I had a follow-up.
Representative Newberg.
Thank you. Sorry, Representative Schoen. So what I'm hearing is you know, I understand the need for the technology upgrade. So in the training, I get that. But there's 244 miles, well, about 264 miles between St. Paul and Moorhead.
Yep.
That's a lot of space, and that's a lot of train, and that's a lot of communities, and that's a lot of oil, and it's all going at about 65 miles an hour at 110 cars apiece, 40,000 gallons. I don't like that. This isn't, like I said, this isn't one issue that's very near and dear to me. And when I sit here and I hear you tell us that you're going to spend $1.3 million on technology and training, I mean, that's all well and good, but technology and training isn't boots on the ground halfway between St. Paul and Moorhead. Again, just this week we had an oil train explode in West Virginia. It's just a matter of time. it's not just a one-time thing. I'm not just crying wolf because I saw a dog in my backyard,
right.
Okay? This is happening on a recurrent basis. I'm not willing to go that far to take a chance. I am very strongly in support of using some of this allocation towards boots on the ground. And my initial question was what does it cost to put a team together and maintain that team? I'm not going to ask you, I'm not going to pin this to you and bring you back in the court of law, okay? I'm not going to do that. But just a ballpark figure, what does one of these teams cost?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, to increase from a CAT team to an ERT is about $100,000 to $150,000. But if you're going to add a team, you also have to look at equipment, and so you're looking at that same $600,000 truck. You're looking at training of that, bringing that team up to speed. So you're talking a fairly substantial amount of money.
Okay. Representative Neuber, just a reminder to members, we do have some other things we do need to do today, and we are running out of time.
All right, I'll be brief here. So how many CAT teams do we have between St. Paul and Moorhead?
We have St. Cloud and Moorhead, and then we have the ability to Hopkins and North Metro and the Spring Lake Park. Well,
Representative Neubert.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, if we have St. Cloud, that's located on the BNSF line, and that's roughly almost maybe halfway. Not close, but it's an improvement. And you also said Spring Lake Park, which is next near Fridley, correct? Mm-hmm. And that's a heavy industrial area. If it's $100,000 to update a CAT team to an ERT team, I think that's money that's well spent. If we could update two of these teams on these heavily traveled areas with these oil trains for $100,000 a piece, I, as a legislator and as a taxpayer and as an emergency professional, think that's money well spent. If that's what it takes to get two more teams, I understand the cost of these things. I get that, but if all we've got to do is spend $150,000 to upgrade one CAT team to an ERT team, and we can do that, $300,000, we got two more teams. Then you know what? Spend the money there, and that's my 2 cents, or my $300,000. Thank you.
Representative Schoen.
This is just a recommendation because that train that blew up in West Virginia came through his district and then through mine on the way east. So I mean, with this, it is a big deal. But I think a lot of this discussion is based around where he's talking about, and even I'm concerned about, is Task Force One, ERTs, and I think maybe we should talk about either taking the committee over to St. Paul Main Station, have a presentation and answer some questions, or at least have a informational hearing about those specific things so that we can get past this particular funding mechanism, and then we can have a further discussion about what we think the needs may be for the task forces in the future. Because I'd actually like to speak with and have people here that are actually involved with the teams, not just the administration. I'm all about chiefs, but Representative Cornish, you and I are both folks that like to hear from the people that actually do the work too, when they have to put on the suit and go out and do whatever. So I think if there's something to think about, Chair, I hope that's something we can do.
So, Mr. Chair, a closing comment to address the two. I just want to share with the committee. There's really three moving parts. The Minnesota Board of Fire Training and Education money, you need the 20,000 firefighters. That's the Army. The CAT team, Task Force One, they're the specialists that come in and help direct. And so we need all three. Would we love to have more money for all three? You bet. This is, again, the first time we've ever had a chance to even talk about base budget for Task Force One. It's a huge step. First time since the inception of the CAT teams to get those funds up there to get them at least self-sufficient, sans all of the personnel costs that are still being donated by the local departments. We share all those same concerns with all of you. And so we'll continue to work with you, work together, and address these problems. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Neuber, if you could do one quick comment, we do need public.
Real quick. I mean, if it's going to cost us $300,000 and we've got $1.3 million allocated towards technology and training, and if it takes $300,000, or if we only spend $150,000 to upgrade one St. Cloud, which is somewhat a midpoint, then spend the money there. As you can tell, I'm passionate about this because when I turn on the news and I see these trains explode, I think about my district, I think about Representative Schoen's district, and everyone in between. So, thank you.
Representative Cornish?
We got to get to the next bill, so the closing comment would be, it looks like a lot of money, but you can tell from the concerns here that there could be a lot of uses, and in the future, as technology develops and everything gets more dangerous on rail and road, it doesn't look like so much money. And plus, I wish we would have had time to go over the that's in the use of this money. If it's not money that's just thrown out there and they can spend however they want, they got oversight for the Department of Public Safety and the Fire Marshal and this board that goes through these requests, and it's not just busy money, but we're running out of time here now. So I would hope for your support, and I guess we're just going to hold it over so we have time to talk about it more.
Okay. Anybody in the audience wishing to speak on this bill? I myself have to have one comment. This bill deals with the educating and training our firemen. I would love to see more funds put in to set up these teams and stuff, but most of this money comes from the insurance companies. It's a part of the fees that when people pay their insurance policies for their homes, which is designed to go to educate the 20-some thousand firemen that we have in the state of Minnesota. Myself, I've been a volunteer fireman and understand the amount of training and amount of time that these volunteers put in. I myself have been having my father and my whole family over for my dad's birthday party, and just as I fired up the grill, I had to leave for 6 hours to fight a fire while they were still at my house having the party, and I was not able to be there. So I want to thank all the firefighters that we have in the state, especially the volunteers that are willing to give up a lot to do this job. And I also want to thank the families that put up with it, because they are gone a lot. And with this education, if you look at the number of fires that we have, we are training our firemen well, or our firefighters well, and the training they're doing in the public from the training they're getting from this program is keeping the amount of fires down. So, any other brief comments? Representative Corner, you wish to renew your motion?
I'll hold the bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you. We will do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson, are you prepared to move your bill? I can. Anybody here want to move? I'll move the bill, House File 239. And your understanding, we're sending this to the General Register?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. There is a delete all amendment. I'd like to move the DE2 amendment.
Okay. I will move the DE2 amendment for consideration on. Get it into the order that the author would like it. All of the favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, Representative Anderson, proceed with your bill.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Interesting committee you have here. I learned a lot this morning. Just some background on the reason for this bill. It came to me from a constituent, a retired dairy farmer back in my county, and he's a conservator for his sister. And she had a fairly sizable amount of assets, about $200,000. And for years, he has done this for her. And each year, they give the county a detailed accounting of where the money went for the past year. And when these conservatorships come up for periodic review by the courts from the 2009 law change, theirs came up this year. And a bond requirement was put into effect. And in their case, the annual bond was going to cost about $2,500. And they were a little bit frustrated, I guess, by the amount that would take every year. in addition to what they pay other lawyer fees and the accounting they also do for the county. So we tried to come up with a bill that would give the courts some discretion as to how much of a bond they would require in situations such as this. This is a second stop for this bill, and there were some concerns addressed. We met with, worked with legal aid, and we have the amendment. And I'd like to have Mr. Elwood go over the changes to the bill with that hopefully seem to satisfy their concerns, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair. Sir, so your name and title and begin.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to say something there. Go ahead, Representative Hilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Given that they were my concerns, I just wanted to make it clear that I am in complete support of the amendment that you made. I have no further concerns, and I think that might shorten the testimony.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Chair and members, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. First, I want to thank Representative Anderson for not only bringing forward a really good bill, but also for so graciously working with us on it. And I'd also like to thank Ms. Perius for her work in getting this all together today. So what this bill simply does is strike a balance between having a state policy that encourages family members to become conservators and others to become conservators for vulnerable adults and minors, and at the same time protect those assets of those folks as the conservator oversees those assets. And it does this in three ways. First, on lines 2.32 to 2.33, it gives the court express discretion to establish the amount of the bond, which addresses some of the concerns that Representative Anderson's constituent had. On lines 2.32 and 2.34, it allows joint conservators, and they can either pool the money or have individual bonds. The third way it strikes this balance is you'll see on lines 2.1 through 3.7, and that does two things. A, it allows a conservator to segregate and protect assets in lieu instead of posting a bond, and at the same time it clarifies that any unprotected assets are still subject to the bond requirement and therefore provide protections to the vulnerable adult or minor. And that's what the bill does.
Okay, members, any questions, concerns, comments? Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question would relate to that part that mandates that a bond must be ordered if assets outside the protected account are valued at more than $10,000. Given today, isn't that threshold kind of small?
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertaus, that, of course, is the minimum, but courts will typically take into account, and especially with the discretion given in this bill, will take into account the size of the estate, the experience of the conservator, the qualifications of the conservator, the circumstances. In this case, I think he's been doing it for 16 years or some really long time, as opposed to somebody who just the first time and maybe does not have familiarity. So that's what this bill is designed to do, is to give the court discretion to set the appropriate amount of the bond given these factors.
Representative Hertaus.
So the threshold is $10,000 and a bond must be ordered, but it gives the court discretion as to how much of a bond is necessary. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Mr. Elwood?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertaus, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, members, any questions? Okay, if not, I'll move House File 239 to be recommended to pass and move to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Unless anybody has any concerns here, we'll adjourn. Thank you.